This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Michelle Martin in Washington. It's time now for the Talk of the Nation opinion page. Immigration is a global issue, not just a national one, argues Daniel Snyder in his op-ed, which appeared in Sunday's San Jose Mercury News. He's a fellow at the Shorenstein Asia-Pacific Research Center at Stanford University and the foreign affairs columnist for the San Jose Mercury News. We talk with him today about the lessons he thinks the United States can learn from other countries. Have you lived abroad? What kind of immigration policies did they have where you were, and how did they work? Join the conversation. Call us at 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And now Daniel Snyder joins us from the studios at Stanford University in Palo Alto, California. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Michelle.
You cited Singapore as an example. Tell me about Singapore.
Well, I happened to be in Singapore a couple of weeks ago, and I was participating in a panel discussion at the National University of Singapore on sort of contemporary issues in Asia. And I was very struck because the Singaporeans were talking a lot about problems like aging populations, low fertility rates, prosperous Singaporean couples who have less children, and as a result are importing tremendous amounts of labor, and they're dealing with these problems of labor immigration and what to do with these people in their midst. So they have a third of their workforce are immigrants or migrants, and most of them are not meant to be there permanently. They have a very elaborate guest worker program, which, listening to the descriptions of it, frankly, made me start to think about the discussion that we were having back in the United States.
Well, give me an example. One example that I remember that stood out is that if a female household employee becomes pregnant, she's deported immediately.
Well, that was the one that jumped out at me as well. I was just stunned by that. Basically, they turn the employers almost into police. First of all, one out of every seven households in Singapore has a domestic worker, a maid. And most of these people come from nearby, less wealthy Asian countries like Indonesia and the Philippines. And the employer has to post a bond, several thousand dollars, U.S. dollars, more in Singapore dollars. And if that employee breaks the rules, and one of those rules is you can't get pregnant, you can't basically have any relationships which allow you to stay in that country, then the employer has to give up the money. So they become sort of policemen for the people that are working for them. And the result is that there is tremendous problems of abuse of domestic workers. In fact, Human Rights Watch did a long report on this. And they are
It would really, seem to be really ripe for abuse. I mean, that people are essentially have no freedom of movement. Very difficult for them to compete effectively for other wages. So forgive me, Mr. Snyder, just for pushing this along here, but what would you suggest that the U.S. should learn from Singapore's experience?
Well, what it makes me very wary of is guest worker programs in general, and specifically guest worker programs which really don't allow the person who comes in any real avenue to become a citizen, a participant in that society. You get a two-class society. In Singapore, they don't mind importing what they call talents, you know, really the high-end immigrants who they want to stay. And then the low-end people, they just want them to come in, work, and leave. And I worry about a program in the United States which leads us down that path. I think it's really alien to the traditions of America in which every immigrant is a potential citizen. I lived in Japan for many years, and that problem was there as well. You see it throughout Asia, where there really are, it's very clear, you're here there to work, but you can never become a part of this society.
What about Europe? What is the European experience?
I think the European experience has also been similar in that regard. You can look back to what was called the Gastarbeiter program, the guest worker program in Germany in the 1960s, which brought in, you know, many hundreds of thousands of Turks and Yugoslavs with the explicit idea that they could never become citizens of Germany. And the result is, again, you create an underclass. I think it's a breeding ground potentially for problems like, as we see now in Europe, of Islamic radicalism. I think the dangers of, it sounds rational, guest workers. You bring in people just to do the job. You don't deal so much with the problems of massive illegal immigration, supposedly. But I think it's a really insidious attack on the values, at least, that I think have underlined American immigration policy.
Fareed Zakaria argues in a column in this week's Newsweek that America has a better way of dealing with immigrants. So why consider changing it for the worse? What do you think of that?
Well, I agree with that, basically. I think, you know, as I've lived abroad a good deal of my life, and I've always felt proud to be an American because, in part, there was always this idea that anybody can become an American. We had a definition of citizenship that wasn't defined by race, by ethnicity, by religion, by anything like that. And I've lived in places, as I said, like Japan, where it was very clear that you could never become a Japanese. You could live there all your life, you will never be Japanese. And I think that concept is so fundamental to what is the United States as a nation that I think it's really, we need to, even at the cost of dealing with some of the problems of illegal immigration, and they're substantial, I agree with it, we need to preserve that.
What do you think, then, is the appeal of this guest worker program now, or this proposal now, given that the experience, I'm guessing that your view on this is not the, I'm guessing you're not the only person who has observed the same thing, that you're creating basically a two-tier system of relationship with the country, your home country, which is just a breeding ground for resentment. So why do you think, what is the appeal here now?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Here in Silicon Valley, we've had actually a guest worker program for a long time. It's called the H-1B visa program. We don't call it a guest worker program, but it's temporary visas, supposedly, for people to come and do work, many of them in the tech industry. And it created exactly this kind of problem of people who are here resenting the people who come in, who are basically being brought in as cheap labor. I think the appeal is, first of all, to employers. It's the appeal of having lower wage labor within the boundaries of the United States to deal with, you know, whatever the demand that they're trying to fill, whether it's construction workers or field, you know, agricultural workers or in the high tech industry. So I think, first of all, it seems like a rational solution to a labor problem. I don't know that it's an immigration policy as much as it's a labor policy.
Are there any countries that, in your view, are dealing with immigration better than the United States is or has, or is currently, I think is probably the more relevant question?
I don't know that there's a model out there. I mean, I think the United States has a particular problem because we have a lengthy border with a developing country, Mexico. There are a lot of countries who don't have those borders, and therefore they can control the flow of illegal immigrants more effectively than we do. So I don't know that they necessarily present examples that we should follow. I do feel, though, that we need to realize that this is a global problem. I mean, there are 200 million migrants, if you will, moving across international boundaries every year. This is a huge amount of people, and most of them are moving from the developing world to the developed world. You can go across Asia and find this issue. You can see it in the Middle East. You can see it in Europe. We need to, first of all, I think, have a global dialogue on this issue. We need to look around and see what examples there are. We need to collect data. There is, in fact, a global commission on international migration that the UN Secretary General formed a few years ago, which has issued an initial report, and there's some studies that are out. I think having at least the examples, and not only that, the possibility of maybe even cooperating across national boundaries on this is the first step.
I'd like to bring a caller into the conversation. Let's go to Exton, Pennsylvania, and Susan. Welcome, Susan. Susan, what's on your mind? Caller, okay, hold on a second, please, sorry. Okay, let's go to San Francisco and Eric.
Hi.
Many
years ago, I used to live in Germany, and they have a lot of Turkish immigrants there. And something that I found odd while I was there was that naturalized German citizens who came from Turkey, if they had children in country, their children were not automatically German citizens. They had to go through the same naturalization process and were apparently subject to the possibility of being kicked out if they, if something happened. I don't know if it's still like that, but I found that extremely odd.
Eric, did you have enough relationships with? Did you ever meet any of these folks? And can you give us a sense of how they felt about it?
Well, I did meet some of the German Turks. It was kind of odd that they were married. The one that I became particularly friendly with was actually married to a Russian immigrant as well. And he was always very upset about it. And he had the idea that this was being precipitated mostly by the new Eastern Germans who had recently come in. As I said, this was quite some time ago.
You know, the German policy on citizenship has changed over the years, but initially it was very restrictive. I mean, you could not become a German citizen if you were a Turkish guest worker. And in contrast, for example, Germans, people of German origin from Russia, who had never lived in Germany. These are people who immigrated, you know, this is a migration at least a century or two old, were allowed to return to Germany, or I use the word return loosely, were allowed to come to Germany and become citizens more readily than the Turks who had been living there and their children who had been born in Germany. And I think that's the kind of problem that these type of guest worker policies raises, because there is the sort of hidden message of ethnicity and race sometimes lurking behind it.
Daniel Sayer, I'm not sure if you told me what the status quo is in Germany now. Have they made it easier for second generation former workers or the children of workers to become citizens?
My understanding is that they have. I mean, this was a significant, you know, issue in Germany for a long time. But, you know, the German Gastarbeiter program that is of allowing people to come in on that basis, I don't think exists in quite the same form that it did originally. But we have the example of it, and I think we see elsewhere in Europe the same issues arising. I noticed the other day in Italy there were problems, you know, demonstrations being held about the issue of bringing in guest workers. So this is a problem that still is ongoing.
Do you believe that, and this is a very complicated topic, but do you believe that these immigration policies are in part what have contributed to the rise of an embrace of radical Islam in parts of Europe?
Well, this is not something I'm an expert on, but so I you know, I'm only basing myself on what I, you know, what I've sort of read. But I think there's no doubt when you bring people into your midst, and yet you say, we're setting you apart, you're not really part of this society, then it seems to me you're creating already the premise that, you know, you have a separate identity. And I think that creates certainly the attraction for that type of alienation, creates the attraction for radical ideologies of all kinds. And certainly I would think radical Islam would be one of them.
I just want to take a break to remind our listeners that you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Daniel Snyder, you said earlier that you don't think that there are really other nations with comparable borders and comparable historical experiences that the U.S. can draw from. But if I'm not taking you beyond your comfort zone, what given that there seems to be a lot of heat around immigration now, that there's a lot of political energy around this issue now, what makes sense to you? I mean, what makes sense to you as a way to address whatever these political anxieties are, or real and economic, this is not to be diminishing anybody, but to address the kind of the heat around immigration without adopting what, in your view, are some just flawed proposals, which in the end do more harm than good.
Well, I think, you know, we had a basic policy which says we set an immigration quota, an overall quota, and we have country-specific, region-specific quotas that are based upon hopefully some deliberation about what our capacity is to absorb immigrants, what our needs are as a nation. And clearly we favor more highly skilled immigrants than we do low-skilled immigrants, at least in our sort of stated policy. I don't think that's a bad policy. I think that's a good policy. The problem is, of course, that we have illegal immigration, which accompanies the legal immigration. And I think we need to sort of separate these two issues. I think our legal immigration policy is actually a fairly rational one, and one that's evolved over a period of time. I think the issue is, what do you do about the people who, you know, come in around the rules? The ones that are already inside the borders of the United States, I mean, I basically agree with the approach in the compromise bill that's been sent to the floor of the Senate, which doesn't seek to penalize those people, but seeks to give a process for them to legalize themselves. But I do think that it's important to enforce the immigration rules we have.
Thank you. Thank you. Daniel Snyder is a fellow at the Shorenstein Asia-Pacific Research Center at Stanford University and the foreign affairs columnist for the San Jose Mercury News. You could read his op-ed. It appeared in Sunday's San Jose Mercury News. His and all the previous stories in this series are linked at the Talk of the Nation page at npr.org. And Mr. Snyder joined us from the studios at Stanford University in Palo Alto, California. Thank you, Mr. Snyder, for joining us.